You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks with you. Hour three here on 98.7 ESPN. Talking a lot about the NFL draft. Concluded yesterday. And of course, getting you ready for your Knicks 76ers matchup. Coming your way right here on 98.7 ESPN. 1 o'clock, 12:30. We're with you until 12:30 leading up to your Knicks pregame show. Mike Giddens joins us now, a.k.a. Gids, Pro Scout Evaluator, has his own company, Pro Scout Inc., the inventor, creator of the blue, red, and purple system that many teams out there in the NFL respect and call on his services. Mike, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Anita. How are you?
I'm great. All that hard work all year long, and now you wake up this morning and you start all over again, right?
I'm going to take a little deep breath.
So for the folks out there, I guess give them a little bit more insight in regard to what you do and how you consult teams and your blue, red, purple system.
Yeah, you know, well, the company started in 1977 by my father. My father was a former coach, college NFL. He just walked the World Football League. He was the head coach, general manager over in Hawaii. And the league folded. And at the time, he had this idea of, you know, helping NFL teams upgrade the back end of their roster. So after working 1 year with the Broncos and being the first pro personnel director, he came up with the idea of Pro Scout. And Denver came in and a few other teams. And instead of using numbers to talk about players, he came up with a color system. Blue being the best, red, purple, those are players you can win with. And so instead of talking numbers when evaluating a player, we use colors. Oh, he's got blue speed, he's got red strength, you know, he's got orange change of direction. It just correlates better than saying using numbers or other types of words. So as the company grew, you know, it was good after a couple of years. The Don Shula's, Paul Brown's, Tom Landry's, Jim Finks's of the world became clients. And we became kind of trusted evaluator, outside evaluators of teams. And then came Plan B and then free agency. And that's kind of when the company took off in a sense of helping them provide an outside evaluation of players. And then also having a monetary value. So to help teams, you know, not make, say, a fiscal mistake. We've been doing analytics since day one. So we have like an analytic part of the equation. And what teams kind of hire us for is kind of exactly, you know, what do we see? What's the fit? Because, you know, importantly with every team, you know, fit and matchup. And how can this player play for us or help fill a need? We have an Axiom 1, a playoff guarantee, fill 6-year top 8 needs, have 10 or more blue players, and have a strike to blue ratio of 2-1, and it's a playoff guarantee. And the last 32 Super Bowl teams have had Axiom 1. So for the next couple months, we'll go through the rosters. How do your needs look? Who could be possible blues? And how are you doing on strikes to get to Axiom 1? And a strike has to do with age, injury, and declining production.
Wow.
So that's what we've
been doing. It's a lot to digest.
Been lucky. Been worked with 38 Super Bowl teams and a lot of great people in the last 46 years.
All right. So let's dive into it. Round one, Caleb Williams goes to the Bears. Jane Daniels, number two, to the Washington Commanders. And then the Patriots on the board. To me, this is where the draft really began. I was told that the Patriots were really in love with Drake May. Apparently, we had Jordan Renan on earlier, and there's some other reports that the Giants did call the Patriots to inquire about what would it take to trade up to go get Drake May at 3. Obviously, it's not what happened, but there were a lot of mixed bags with Drake May. I love Drake May. You and I have had the conversation. I know that you're not really big on Drake May. Your thoughts on him going 3 overall to the Patriots?
Yeah, I mean, you love the numbers. You love the height, weight, and 40. So that's the first thing that jumps out. what I always look at is for a quarterback, you know, especially the NFL, from college to the NFL, the game's going to get so much faster, just like it does from anything, from high school to college. The game gets faster. The number one, my college roommate was a quarterback in the NFL for 12 years. And I remember asking him, you know, what's the biggest difference? And he goes, you know, in college in Illinois, like, if I was a little late or a little behind on a throw, you know, maybe they'd catch it or be an incomplete. He goes, I do that in the NFL, and that's an interception. And so with Drake May, I didn't see the quick reads and the accuracy that I saw in the other quarterbacks. The key thing to me with a quarterback, it's not the arm strength. It's, do you see it quickly, and can you get it out of your hand quickly and accurately? It's not how you throw the football, it's when and where. And I didn't see him being red or blue in those two categories.
So in your eyes, with Giants fans listening right now, Mike, you're like, you guys dodged a bullet, is what you're telling Giants fans.
I think so. I think what you would have been looking at is the next Daniel Jones.
Interesting. So Marvin Harrison goes at 4. Joe Alt, many anticipated the best offensive lineman, goes to the Chargers at 5. A lot of people were expecting them to trade at that spot. Of course, they did not. And then the Giants take Neighbors over Odunze, or an offensive lineman. Your thoughts on that pick, LSU wide receiver, and how you think that he's going to have success here in New York with the Giants?
Yeah, what I see in Neighbors is he's a number one receiver. And what a number one receiver can do, and lately in the NFL, is they can multi-align. And what I mean by that is he can play outside, he can play in the slot, we can motion him, we can create, you know, situations and try to create matchups to expose the defense. Obviously, he's got the size and the speed and the big play ability. And so when I talk about a number one or multi-line, you know, think about Devontae Adams, think about Jamar Chase, of how they multi-align them and to create matchups for them to make big plays. And I saw him being a little bit better than Odunze in that sense. And I saw him a little bit better being explosive off the line of scrimmage.
So you feel that this was the wiser choice in wide receiver for the Giants, Mike, right?
Absolutely. And especially the fit and, you know, because, you know, he's 200 pounds, he's 6 foot. You know, the NFC East, you know, that's one of the toughest divisions in football. You need big, strong, fast, explosive players, and he fits that profile.
Then at 7, Tennessee takes Latham, the second offensive tackle taken off the board. And then the draft got crazy with Atlanta taking Michael Penix Jr. at 8. Washington quarterback, a quarterback that you like a lot. Why don't you let the folks know why?
Yeah, so of the quarterbacks, I think I had him after Caleb Williams, probably, you know, him and Jaden Daniels as my next quarterbacks I liked. Throwing on the tape, what I liked about him was, like C.J. Stroud last year, he got better as the season progressed, and maybe one of the most explosive downfield throwers I've evaluated in college. And what I mean by downfield throwers, I call plays that are, say, that you throw the ball, say, 15 yards or further down the field, chunk routes. Those are your seams, your goes, your deep ends, your posts, so on and so forth. And in the NFL, on offense, it's about creating big plays. Defense, it's about eliminating big plays. So, you know, being able to push the ball down the field to make big plays, I'm looking for quarterbacks that do that with about 25% of their throws. You know, even when Brady and Peyton Manning and Drew Brees were getting old, they were still pushing the ball down the field. You have to when the opportunities are there, you've got to try to create them. And what I saw in Penix was the ability to do that and be, he's got a strong arm and he's very, very accurate. And he saw it quickly and could make plays down the field. I call him, like, you know, when I'm watching tape and I say to myself, like, wow. And him and Jayden Daniels had the most wow plays on tape this year.
So, and a lot of people feel that this was the stupidest pick. Falcons should not have done this. I actually did some due diligence and research what Kirk Cousins' contract is. Atlanta could get out of Kirk Cousins' contract after 2 years with a quote-unquote only $25 million dead cap space hit. So, thought process, bring Penix in, have him learn under Kirk Cousins for 2 years. You're not going to play out the total four-year contract with Kirk Cousins. So do you think this is a wise pick for Atlanta?
I do, and for these reasons. Number one, do you ever pass on what you think is a franchise quarterback?
No.
And so they didn't. Two, you just talked about the Kirk Cousins contract. Another reason is, it's a brand new coaching staff. They have time. It's not like the new coach has, you know, Raheem doesn't have to win next year. The other one is, and I'll be the first one that says this, why is there this huge assumption that Kirk Cousins is going to be great next year or good or adequate? Yeah, he was playing well before he got his Achilles pop. But with that being said, you know, age-wise, hang on a minute. I know I'm supposed to be quick, but I want to be.
I think 30. I think 38. 30.
Yeah, so he's 38. So I yep. want to say he's the second or the third oldest quarterback, maybe the oldest quarterback, in the league. Well, you got Rodgers. So I don't think that's what kind of, like, you know, you heard me talk about strikes. Well, he's got all three. So the odds for him to be, say, blue, red, purple next year are less than 20%. So I think it's a good pick. I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Penix Jr. is playing quarterback by week 8.
Wow. So now we go down to 9. The Bears are sitting there. They take Odunze. I had a few Jets fans call in disappointed. They would have liked to have seen Joe D move up and go get Odunze as opposed to Fashanu. Of course, we know at 10, traded with the Minnesota Vikings, so they actually traded down, still got their offensive tackle from Penn State. But do you, you know, Odunze, what do you think would have been a better pick for this Jets team? Many people feel Fashanu isn't even going to be on the starting 5 offensive line.
Oh, he'll be the left tackle. All right, we already have a go-to number one receiver in Garrett Wilson. And we know, take the other element, if Aaron Rodgers is at quarterback and healthy, we know how he can, say, upgrade the other receivers. So by protecting Aaron Rodgers, remember, it was the right end that got Rodgers, you know, on the fourth play of the year. So by protecting him with, I think, the best pass protecting tackle in the NFL, or get pass protecting ready tackle in the draft, you now protect Aaron. You've already got your go-to receiver in Wilson. Aaron will make the other receivers better, but, and now he's protected. I think it was the correct pick.
So you're all on board with the Jets selecting Fashanu at 11.
Absolutely.
Bo Nix goes to Denver at 12. I know you and I spoke before the draft. You were anticipating this because Bo Nix reminds Sean Payton a lot of Drew Brees, so no surprise there. And then Brock Bowers goes to the Raiders at 13. This was another player that many anticipated the Jets to draft. You still would have taken the offensive tackle over Bowers, the tight end.
Yeah, I would have. I would have. Protect Aaron Rodgers. Let's get that left tackle position filled. I mean, shoot, when was the last one? When we had DeBrickashaw Ferguson was the last stable left tackle for the Jets. Let's get the left tackle position stable and let's go.
Last one I want to tee up for you is Latu, defensive edge rusher from UCLA. Heading into this draft, you felt he was the best player, best defensive player coming off the board. He had that fused neck surgery that kept a lot of people away from him. But you feel that he could really be one of the best edge rushers in all of the NFL, Mike. Tell us why.
Well, one, you take his numbers, which I think are they're blue numbers. And what I mean by that is you know, he's 6'4", you know, he's 260 pounds. He runs 4.6. So he's got the ideal height, weight, 40 time. Then you throw the tape on, and what you're always looking for on an edge rusher is, does he have like a long first step? You know, like all of a sudden the offensive tackle's going, whoa, which he does. Does he work half the man, which he does? And then what you're looking for is, does he have hand-feet coordination? You know, it's not like you run into the guy and try to push the tackle back to the quarterback. There's an array of moves you can use, you know, rips and grabs and arm unders and swims. And what happens sometimes with pass rushers is you do your first move, and let's say it gets fronted by the offensive lineman. Do you have a counter move to go to? And what I saw with this kid is, one, he won the first move a high percentage, but when he did get fronted, he had a second counter move that was really quick. Think of the Bosa brothers, technique-wise and move-wise. They're phenomenal at that also. And that's what I saw in Latu, is just he was always working, and he had phenomenal hand-feet coordination. His feet never stopped. He was always gaining, and he always had his hands in coordination working against the blocker.
Mike, before we let you go, really quick, just want to get your thoughts on the complete draft class for the Giants. Neighbors, Newbin, Phillips, they draft the tight end Theo Johnson from Penn State in the fourth because not sure what's going to happen with Darren Waller. They get a running back from Purdue at five and a linebacker from UCLA in the sixth. If you had to grade the Giants draft class, what would you give them?
Right now, I'd probably give them, you know, B plus, A minus.
What is?
I think they drafted good players.
Okay.
You know, even though I push needs, I'm always you draft the blues, and they drafted, in my opinion, the best player on the board when they came up. And then you work because, you know, a purple will fill the need, but if there's a blue on the board, you draft them, and they did.
And taking a look at what the Jets were able to do, again, you sound really, really happy with the offensive tackle. Corley, the wide receiver from Western Kentucky. Allen, a running back from Wisconsin. Curious to get your thoughts on Jordan Travis, quarterback from FSU. Another running back from South Dakota State in Davis. And, of course, they get Mr. Irrelevant, Jalen Key. But your thoughts on what the Jets were able to do?
Well, I thought I was excited. Aaron Rodgers has got to be excited in a sense that they drafted offense for him they upgraded his supporting cast. And if you think about it, when he was at the Green Bay, they kept using high draft picks and free agent money on defensive players. So Aaron's got to be the happiest guy in the world after this weekend of like, oh, I got a team that gave me some supporting cast. So I thought it was great. You know, they've got a window with him, and let's make him as good as possible. Let's make our offense great. So it's a lot easier playing defense when your offense has a lead than vice versa.
That's for sure. Mike Giddings joins us here on 98.7 ESPN from Pro Scout Inc. Mike, thank you so much for spending some time with us, just breaking down majority of the first round and your thoughts on the Giants and the Jets. Appreciate you, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
All right, you too, Anita. Have a good day.
You got it.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Happy Sunday fun day to everybody out there. There are 98.7 ESPN. Let's get to your phone lines. 800-919-3776. Jose in Brooklyn wants to talk about the Knicks game 4 later on this afternoon. Dan Graza, by the way, is going to be hosting your Knicks pregame show. And of course, tip off is around 1 o'clock. Jose, welcome in.
Hey, good morning, Anita. Shout out to the company. Definitely wanted to talk some Knicks, you know, as we're getting prepared for game 4. And I was listening to you speak with Moak, and I pretty much was kind of like, you know, agreeing with what he was saying, like with how his analysis was, with how the different officiating is, because that, you know, the how they let Embiid pretty much get away with that was just kind of pretty much insane, because what annoys me the most about it was it's a situation where Mitchell Robinson did, like, kind of like Joel Embiid, worked hard to get back to kind of make a playoff run, and for him to kind of do that, it was just like that was just beyond heinous. And I do think that the refs are going to be pretty much closely keying in, and there is going to be a lot of pretty much calls going both ways, where we're going to see a lot more, a lot of the physicality possibly toned down, which is going to kind of suck, but it is what it is. That's kind of, you know, the flow of the game, but we'll see. And I hope that the Knicks can kind of take advantage of it, because I do think that Hartenstein does need to step up and have a big game, more on the defensive end as well, because it just can't be a situation where he just scores, you know, 8 more points and it just looks good. We need, you know, more of a defensive presence where he can't let Embiid, you know, have a repeat performance. And hopefully we can win this game, because I do agree with what was said earlier. I do think that if we can win game 4, we take the commanding 3-1 lead and hopefully try to close it out at the Garden. So let's see how it plays out. Thank you for having me on. Have a great one, Anita. And happy birthday.
You got it, Jose.
As well.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Hope to see you up in Stamford, Connecticut next Sunday, because I know you're a big part of the company. Listen, I don't expect the Knicks to win today. I just don't. I think the series is going to be all tied up at 2-2, but I still think the Knicks win the series. I'm still confident that the Knicks win the series. You know, they continue to have home court advantage. I believe the Knicks will not lose a home game moving forward. Just my two cents. 800-919-3776. What say you? We get back, we'll find out what's trending around 11:30 a.m. on this Sunday with Click or Don't Click when we get back right here on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. This is Click, 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 or Don't. Very simply, here's the headline. Are you interested in clicking or not?
That's right. It's time for Click or Don't Click. A fun way we take our tour around our wide, wide world of sport. We find out what is trending based on the headlines. And if the headlines grab us to say, yeah, you know what? I want to know more. Our producers lead the way. And of course, that's Tom and Harvey this morning. Gentlemen, what you got?
All right, Anita, kicking things off on Click or Don't Click. A little Roger Goodell headline from Pat McAfee the other day, Anita. Mm. Are you in favor of more games on the NFL schedule? Let's start with that.
Have we met?
So that's
going to
be. That's obviously going to be
Have
a yes.
Have we met? Of course, yes. Now, are players? Absolutely not. But am I? Yeah, the more football, the better. So, yes, I am clicking that. Excellent. Or I'm going to read more about it. Or I'm going to listen to that clip.
Oh, you're going to be listening to it. Roger Goodell on McAfee talking about the NFL schedule. He's happy with 17 games, but he hints that he could want more.
I think we're good at 17 now. But listen, we're looking at how we continue. I'm not a fan of the preseason. I'd rather replace a preseason game with a regular season any day. That's just picking quality, right? So if we got to 18-2, that's not an unreasonable thing. The other thing it does, which I thought you were going to, is that ends up on President's Day weekend, which is a three-day weekend, which makes the Sunday night, and then you have Monday off. So that's...
Wow.
Now we're cooking. See?
What are we thinking there, Anita?
Finally, he said what I've been preaching for years now. So a few things. Number one, yeah, get rid of preseason games because A, nobody watches. B, coaches don't utilize them like they used to, right? Like, we are in this day and age of joint practices. And that's where their starters are getting the most reps. If anything, have those joint practices be televised on the NFL Network or ESPN or Fox. Those joint practices is really what we want to watch for preseason, really getting these guys ready for the season. So do away with the preseason games that nobody cares about, nobody watches, coaches don't even utilize. Add another game, and then what you're doing is you're pushing, like the commissioner said, you're pushing the Super Bowl 1 week later, so now you've got that President's Day on Monday, so people don't have to go to work on that Monday following the Super Bowl. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And that's why he gets paid $60 million a year.
Well, we're going to have to go to work on that Monday following the Super Bowl, but that's besides the point.
Well, we do. Majority of people don't.
That's true.
What else do you have?
Just to tie into a local aspect, something that kind of went under the rug was that John Franklin Myers was traded from the Jets to the Denver Broncos, traded for a 2026 sixth-round pick. Here's Robert Saleh on the trade.
It's going to be tough, but we love the guys that we have in our room. Obviously, JFM with his leadership and all that stuff, it's going to be sorely missed. I mean, just to echo what Joe just said, when we first got here, red flags all over his name, and you just saw an individual who worked at it, not just from a football standpoint, but as a character, a man, a father. He's an unbelievable leader, unbelievable human, unbelievable player, and just to echo what Joe said, Denver got a hell of a player.
He was scheduled to make $29 million for the next 2 years, but of course, the Jets traded with the Eagles to get Hassan Reddick. Do you think they'll miss him at all, Anita?
I don't know. I need to see, what they have, what type of depth they have. But all they got is a sixth round draft pick.
A 2026 sixth round pick is what I'm looking at.
So right there, my response is no.
Okay. I mean, they do have Reddick. They have Jermaine Johnson, Will McDonald, Michael Clemens. So they have some depth there.
Right. But if all you're getting is a sixth round draft pick in exchange for a player.
I understand. You're speechless right now.
Yeah. I don't know like that. And also, like, that's not a, I don't know. I'm thinking, like, what's trending right now? Like, do you feel that that's the most read article or column right now?
Now we're being subjective.
I'm looking for something that's going to grab me that I'm going to be like, oh snap. Yeah. I need to read more up on that.
All right. You want some more fire, Anita? Let's get into the next.
Yeah, exactly.
Story.
I want fire. This Sunday morning.
You want to hear an NFL GM?
Give me Cousins doesn't have to worry about Penix. You imagine Kirk Cousins is sitting there and the Atlanta Falcons go out and draft Penix. He's got to be sitting there going, what the?
That's a great story. That's not where I was going. So,
okay,
do you want to hear some fire from an NFL GM, Anita?
Let's do it.
All right. Chris Ballard, the Indianapolis Colts GM.
Mm-hmm.
He has a way with words. So, Adonai Mitchell, they drafted in the second round with the 52nd overall pick. Apparently, it was reported from various sources in the NFL media that the pre-draft experience for Mitchell, it was a bit turbulent. Apparently, he didn't interview well with teams. Maybe some people didn't get a good feel on him. Well, Chris Ballard, again, Indianapolis Colts GM, he's speaking here about the bad mouthing of Adonai Mitchell. Take a listen to this.
I don't know. I mean, I read some of the bullshit that was said on TV. I mean, just the typical, excuse my language, our typical league, unnamed sources, you know, bad interview. That's such bull. I mean, it's bull. Like, put your name on it. I'm tired of, we tear these young men down. These are 21, 22 young men. And if you can, if people out there can tell me they don't, they're perfect in their lives, it's crap. It's crap. This is a good kid. And, you know, for that, for those reports to come out, like, you know, I said it last year. It's bullshit. I'm sorry. I apologize for the language. I don't, but I do.
I don't, but I do. Excuse the language, and then proceeds to curse again. Listen,
I'm sorry. He's the general manager of what team?
This is the Colts.
The Colts?
Yes.
Who went out and drafted Latu, who, again, we just had Mike on, felt that he was the best defensive player in this draft, and let alone possibly even better than the Bosa brothers. boy, does he have a potty mouth. Listen, here's what I mean, what he's saying is true. There's a lot of misinformation that is thrown out there. A general manager or a scout will leak this or say this to a certain reporter who, you know, then reports something, and then that player's draft capital decreases. Because, you know, like, so for example, when the Neighbors thing came out, Albert Breer is reporting that Neighbors is going to need shoulder surgery at some point in time in his career. And you don't think it's how coincidental, how convenient that that was released like 2 days before the draft, right? So there had to be a motivate. And I'm not saying, listen, I know Albert Breer. He's very good. He's got his finger on the pulse of the NFL and has for quite a while. Immense respect for him. I'm not saying that his report is false. But this is what happens to try to get teams to, not value a certain player or be scared of a certain player because of injury or personality or off the field issues. You know what I mean? It's gotten nuts. But to the general manager's comments, it's not fair to these young men. You know, these 21, 22-year-old men who some of them get their names dragged through the mud or get something very personal exposed because another team is trying to diminish their draft capital. So he's right. He's right. You got one more? What else is trending?
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier, so we might as well just hand it to you. Raheem Morris says that Kirk Cousins does not have to worry about Penix Jr. He said that the two have had a phone call Thursday night, and it was a very good conversation, and that Raheem Morris hates it for it to be the story of the draft. I'm going to assume that this would be not only the story of the draft, but it would be the story of their camp, their preseason, and even their regular season. By the way, we do realize that Kirk Cousins is coming off a torn Achilles, correct? Even though he signed that massive deal?
Right.
So, is it possible that maybe Penix does see some time on the field?
Well, Mike thinks that Penix is going to be starting at least by week 8. So
week 8, could you imagine that? Already have to wait through the season and you got to go to Penix for whatever reason?
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked, again, considering that he's coming off of Achilles surgery. But, you know, here's the thing. You know, obviously, this is an Atlanta Falcons team that anticipated drafting Penix Jr. If I'm Kirk Cousins, and now I've granted they're paying him a boatload of money, $150 million guaranteed. Don't you think, like, and so it's two sides here, right? One is we need to keep this close to the vest because we don't want anything leaking. If teams out there knew that the Atlanta Falcons' plan all along was to draft Penix at 8, then teams would have, you know, the Vikings wouldn't have been as comfortable sitting there thinking that Penix was going to fall to them at 12, right? So, or 11, wherever they were. So there's that, right? But at the same time, you know, don't you feel a little obligated that now, and Kirk Cousins had options now. Let's keep that in mind. Kirk Cousins was the most coveted quarterback in free agency this year. Don't you feel as an organization, as a general manager, as a head coach, an obligation to Kirk Cousins to let him know that you are going to be drafting a quarterback and for him not to freak out? But again, you're walking a tight line because you don't want any information to be revealed or released, or, you know, all hell breaks loose in regard to teams that were in need of quarterbacks looking to then trade up above the Atlanta Falcons. It's a slippery slope, right? I mean, you could see both sides, can't you?
Absolutely.
So, could you imagine you're sitting there and you're Kirk Cousins and Atlanta takes Penix and you're sitting there going, what the? And then all of a sudden your phone rings and it's your general manager or your head coach going, hey, Kirk, let's talk. Could you imagine how that conversation went down?
At least he's getting paid his money. So whatever happens, he'll get paid.
Anyway. All right, guys, this is what's trending at 11:46 a.m. on this Sunday fun day. When we get back, let's do a deeper dive into the Knicks. Let's get you locked and loaded for the game coming your way at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Dan Grosso with a pregame show at 12:30. We're with you till then. Quick break. We'll be right back right here on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, Knicks in action a little bit later on this afternoon. We're just about 40 minutes away for your Knicks pregame show. Dan Grosso will be hosting that. And then, of course, the Knicks and 76ers will tip off a little bit after 1 o'clock. The 76ers are favored by 4.5. The over-under here is 209. Without Mitch Robinson, and again, guys, any definite confirmation? I mean, we've been hearing that more than likely he's going to be inactive. Do we have any confirmation one way or another?
This is about Mitch, correct?
Yes.
Tibbs in his pregame said he's going to warm up, and then we'll see from there.
Yeah. So I'm leaning towards him not playing because, again, this is what we've been hearing. He was in a boot leaving the game the other night. That's never a good sign. So, you know, a few things here. I think without having Mitch Robinson, I think is a huge concern. Embiid likes to take shots from behind the arc. OG is really going to have to step up with his perimeter defense. That's going to have to happen. Also, rebounding. Game one, the Knicks, 60% of the rebounds their way. Game two, 50% of the rebounds their way. In game three, only 32% of the rebounds their way. Big reason why I think that they did lose, besides the fact that Embiid went off for 50 points. I mean, can you expect that from him again today? Hopefully not. Also, the big difference maker was the foul line. Knicks only had a free throw rate of 14.6, almost 15%. The 76ers, 37.8, almost 38%. So the game was not called in favor of the Knicks. Brunson did not get the calls that Embiid did. And then, of course, we saw the flagrant foul with Embiid. So I think this game is going to be called a lot tighter than game three, which then has me looking at Hartenstein. I think we're going to need a really big game from Hartenstein today, but I'm just worried about him and his ability to stay out of foul trouble. So a few things to me just unfortunately don't align or don't check the boxes for the Knicks. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I have to be honest here. In regard to how I think this game is going to play out. I think it's going to be a tight one. And like I said, the 76ers are favored by 4.5. The over-under is 209. A little bit later on this afternoon, 3:30, you've got the Clippers going up against the Mavs. I do like the Mavs here. I'll lay the 5.5. The Clippers, their defense, no bueno. 23rd ranked defense in the NBA. Kawhi Leonard is not 100%. And actually, I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth, but the Clippers are actually a worse team with Kawhi on the court than he is off. What are you going to tell Kawhi Leonard to sit and not play? Yeah, that's not going to happen. And also, he's not 100% healthy, and this is a quick turnaround for that Clippers team, and they're in Dallas. So I'll lay the 5.5. The over-under is 209.5, by the way. Bucks going up against the Pacers. This line now has jumped to 10.5. It was 9.5. Too much for me, especially at double digits now. I do like the Pacers here. They lead the series 2-1. I like the Pacers to win the series, by the way. So that would be a futures bet that I would make before I play this game. The over-under is 216.5, by the way. And last but not least, at 9:30 later on tonight, the Minnesota Timberwolves going up against the Suns. Just something's off with this Suns team. It really is. Bad defense, especially from KD. Right? With that wingspan, you'd expect him to play better defense, especially on the perimeter. It's just not happening. Also, this is a Suns team. They just don't have a lot of depth. And this is a Minnesota team. They're putting up a minimum of 50 points in the paint. They're dominating in the paint. The Suns just do not have an answer for the T-Wolves' size inside. So I do like the T-Wolves, and I will lay the 1.5. I think Minnesota wins, and they sweep the Suns. That's how I'm playing all these games today, all four games on the NBA slate. Before we take a break, I want to remind you, easily the most anticipated sporting event of the year, it's the Pickleball Showdown between Rick DiPietro, Dave Rothenberg, and of course, me and Amani Toomer. Sunday, that's next Sunday, May 5th at Pickleball America in Stamford, Connecticut. And this is Cinco de Mayo, obviously, so hopefully your plans are to come up, hang out. Pre-game coverage starts on ESPN with me at 8 a.m. I'll have my golf show 9 a.m. with a live broadcast as well. I'll be setting the stage. Rick, Dave, Amani, they'll all be joining me on the show as well, which is going to be fun. Shortly after the show, the paddles come out for the Pickleball Showdown. That's right. And so around 12:30, our match will start. We're going to play the best of five. If Rick and Dave think that they could take, you know, the beating for five games, that's on them. And again, it is all on May 5th. To witness the showcase event at Pickleball America in Stamford, Connecticut. So make sure you guys come out for that.